कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः
Fourth canto, 438. Fourth canto, 38th chapter, 8th verse.
Param vrani dvam bhadram vo yoyam me nrupanandana sauhardena pritak dharma tushtoham sauhrudena vaha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear sons of the King, Prachina Parishad, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since the sons of King Prachina Parishad were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of the King Prachina Parishad was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or entering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions and consequently they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning towards material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benedictions to His devotees, as indicated in this verse. You can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Prachina Parishad.
श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपप्रदामस्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरौ श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश श्रीरूपं सार्वजातं सह गणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सुजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्री राधा कृष्ण पादा सहगणरिता श्री शाकांबिकांश नमो मुष्टिपादाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे सर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशकारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नाम्ने गौरक्षे नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये पाञ्चाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीयद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. Chant a little bit more. It's a very famous verse, what we read just now. Param Vinidva is saying, ask for any benediction you want, Prachetas. Lord Vishnu is telling them. Bhadrambo. Bhadram is auspicious. And then he is saying, Sauhardena Pratakdharmaha Tushtoham Saurdena. He says that you are all engaged in one occupation devotional service and I am very pleased with your friendly relationships. Two times he is using the word Sauhardena. Sauhardena, Sauhardena. Two times he is saying. So, Prabhupada, the first sentence is very famous. Prabhupada saying, since the sons of King Prachina Parishad were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Prabhupada saying, that's the essence of this purport. They were united in their performance of devotional service and Lord was very pleased with them. One time, his owner Ramapad Maharaj came to Bombay and I think he was giving Bhagavatam class or something. In the Bhagavatam class he was telling that he said, in my life, I joined the ISKCON society to learn how to become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says, Krishna conscious, many places. How I can develop love for Krishna, attraction to Krishna, attachment to Krishna. To learn that I joined ISKCON. And then he said, when I joined the temple and I stayed with devotees and as I proceeded, I understood that love for Krishna, developing it is not a very easy thing. You know, you have to study scriptures, you have to render devotion service and everything. At last I understood there is one easy way out, which is Krishna is attracted to his devotees. So only when he can serve the devotees and they are pleased, then Krishna will be pleased. So he said, I learned that technique and that's the secret of attaining Krishna. Then he said, if I have to serve devotees, then I have to associate with them. When I went to associate with them, I realized serving devotees is not a very easy thing. Because when we live in the company of devotees, we find fault with so many devotees. So, and then we commit offenses. And when we commit offenses, we are thrown out of association. We go away from association of devotees. So he said, then I understood how much struggle it is to stay in the company of devotees and not pick faults in devotees, but always see the brighter side of devotees' life. Because there are millions and billions of living entities wandering in this world. There are, even on the surface of the globe, there are 6 billion population. In that, how many of them are agreeing to become Krishna's devotees? Small fraction, tiny fraction. So I understood that the devotees are very rare, but although devotees are very rare, when I am living with them, I always quarrel with them or find fault with them, or criticize them, accuse them, blaspheme them, offend them, and I damage myself more. Rather than developing love for Krishna, I am developing hatred for devotees. And then he said, I understood, if I have to relate with devotees nicely, deal with them very nicely, then I have to develop Vaishnava qualities. Only then I can deal with them in a proper attitude. Then he said, then I came to the conclusion in my life, that right now my immediate goal in life is to develop Vaishnava qualities, namely humility and tolerance, compassion, forgiveness, and patience, this kind of noble qualities. And he said, because by cultivating these qualities, my association with devotees will be fruitful and effective. And when the association is effective, then Krishna will be pleased. When Krishna is pleased, then I can get love for Krishna. So he said that. I came to the conclusion. So, you will find many of the great personalities who want to train their disciples or followers in achieving Krishna prema, and they will give a lot of emphasis on developing the noble qualities, Vaishnava qualities, which are very vital for living a Vaishnava lifestyle, proper life, very essential. So that is why in the morning I was telling you those four statements of B.T. Swami I was telling you in the morning. So B.T. Swami actually trained his disciples in those four principles very deeply. So then the disciples will blossom very powerfully. They can become very, they will be deeply sheltered in their spiritual life. And deeply sheltered means what? Their strength in spiritual life will be inside their heart. The strength will be so powerful that wherever you put them in the world, anywhere in any part of the world, they can practice Krishna consciousness with utmost faith in Krishna. Deep faith in Krishna doesn't develop by mindless endeavor. Or mindless endeavor or running here and there. Like, you know, many times people want to preach, people want to give Krishna consciousness to many people. First you have to ask, what do you want to give them first? You should have something to give them first. What do I have with me in my pocket that I can give them? So, we have to first take a look at ourselves, what I have. What we are trying to give them is this, that when we come to Krishna consciousness, we practice spiritual life deeply, and when we experience joy in rendering of devotion service, and when you understand these sublime principles, what we were discussing yesterday night and today morning, that then we can distribute that to others. Also, we can practice that and we can distribute others. What is it? What is the meaning of a devotee? A devotee means he has absolutely no material desires. He simply wants to serve Krishna as a servant. You put him in any post or position, that is immaterial. The essence of Vaishnavism is, everyone is better than me. Everyone is my master, and I am servant of Krishna, I am servant of all devotees. And the only occupation I love the most is rendering devotion service. And I don't want anything in motivation, I don't have any motivation, I don't want anything in return for my service. I don't even have any expectation from the Lord after my death, where I want to be posted, want to be posted in Vaikuntha or Goloka. A devotee has no aspiration. A devotee aspires only for service. A devotee is willing even to acquire the bodies of animals or birds which his sins committed in the past may drive him to accept his bodies. But he wants to be a Vaishnava. And also, a devotee never considers any material qualifications he may have to be very great. So, in that connection, we are discussing humility. Humility. The Prabhupada is saying, the beginning of all knowledge comes from humility. The Prabhupada is saying here. So, in our interaction with different devotees, Krishna will offer us varieties of tests by making us interact with all types of devotees. See, some devotees are very smooth with you when dealing with you. You like them, they like you, both of you get together, they get along together very well, easily. And there are some devotees whose association creates irritability for you. You know, they often misunderstand you, you misunderstand them. There is a kind of friction. So this is actually Krishna's test for a devotee. Every one of us will have somebody in our life to test us. Will it give us trouble? We may call it trouble. Going to our own shortcomings, we perceive it as trouble. In fact, they are the ones who are going to actually purify us, not the other ones. Those who are very smooth with us, for example, we all like to associate with those who respect us and salute us and say that you are a great soul. Is it not true? Are they going to purify us and make us advance? No, we feel very nice, but we will not grow much. Huh? Whereas those with whom we have difficulty dealing with, their company is going to purify us and improve us, improve us and elevate us. One more point which I didn't tell yesterday. One who is humble is very eager and willing to accept menial services. So he says. You know, Jiva Goswami has studied under Vidya Vachaspati, brother of Sarva Bhattacharya, Sanskrit and everything. And then he came to Vrindavan. When he came to Vrindavan, Rupa Sanatan, they saw this same boy, Jiva, Jiva Goswami. They thought that he has become a great Sanskrit scholar, and if he is immediately engaged in writing or engaged in preaching, it's not good for him. So they engaged him in menial services. Rupa Goswami gave him very, very menial services, like making palm leaves, fanning Rupa Goswami, or washing the pots, cooking in the kitchen, cleaning the floor. He would do all menial services, although he was a very, very great scholar, learned scholar. Because actually menial services help us to remember our original identity as servant, which is often forgotten by us. That is why those who are in the line of intellectual thinking and writing and debating, it is better, best for them to perform menial services. Especially, yeah. Like we say, Narottama Thakur, he belonged to a royal family, princely, he was in a princely class. But he was cleaning the stool and holding up his guru and cleaning up the place, which actually deeply touched the heart of his guru, Lokanath Goswami. Yeah. Actually, Srila Prabhupada also, when he went to America, you know, when Mishra, Yoga Institute Mishra, so he was Prabhupada's friend. That fellow was Mayavadi, and Prabhupada would also be sitting in his class, and sometimes Prabhupada would protest and argue, trying to defeat his Mayavadi. He will tell his students that what he told is a bogus philosophy. Real philosophy is this. So Mishra found him a great challenge. Later on, what Mishra did, he moved Prabhupada to a little faraway place, so that Prabhupada cannot come very easily. Still Prabhupada would come. So, but then afterwards there would be friends. So Mishra, he saw that although Prabhupada is a Vaishnava, often having difference in opinion from his philosophy, Prabhupada always treated him, very compassionately. Like once when Mishra got sick, Prabhupada personally cooked for him and fed him prasadam and everything, and Mishra became very deeply touched. For days together he was cooking for him, Prabhupada, cooking, giving him prasad. So, Prabhupada accepted a lot of menial services, though he was an acharya. He was a great scholar and writer, an acharya, a preacher, but he left India. Actually, he did whatever was necessary. Not only in Lilamrita, you will read, Prabhupada was carrying a big bunch of paper on his head and carrying it in Delhi, in the sannyasi dress, can you imagine? Carrying the dress of Mandika, and he's carrying. Sannyasis are receiving respect from thousands of people falling at their feet and serving them. Whereas Prabhupada was carrying a big bunch of paper for the printing press. And people are wondering, what is this sannyasi? Instead of living in Vrindavan and doing japa, this fellow is carrying paper in the printing press and getting books published and making money. People are thinking. But Prabhupada writes in the Lilamrita, he says, working for Maya and working for Krishna. What is the difference? He writes. He says, yes, we are doing work almost like karmis. But why are we printing these books? We are printing and getting them published and distributing it, and whatever profits come, 100% profits are again put back in Krishna's service. Whereas the other people in this world, they use all their money earnings for sense and jhanmat and everything purposes. So, This is the meaning of an acharya. He was willing to do any service that was needed. Prabhupada, very... So, one point I was telling in the morning that when a person is humble, he considers himself very fallen. You know, Rup Sanatan, recently I was reading this, Nitya Jati, Nitya Sangi, Patita Adama, they're telling about themselves. My dear Lord, we are Nitya Jati, we are born of low caste. Nitya Jati, Nitya Sangi means our association is all hellish. Patita Adama, and we are very fallen, and we are Adama means, we sing every day, no? Adama Janara Bandhu. Adama Janara Bandhu. You see, if you all are given an assignment, how I am Adama? One page you should be able to write. Yeah. Every day we are singing, Adama Janara Bandhu. Prabhupada, you are the Bandhu of Adama Jan like me. How am I Adama? Sir, I am lazy. You don't have to cook anything new. You write the reality. What is true about me? What are all bad qualities in me? We can perceive, we have to endeavor to find out. What are my nature's tendencies? What bad things I have? So, they were expert in finding fault with themselves. So, we all have fault-finding tendency, and the Shastra says, use it to look at, find fault with yourself, he says. One's own self. So, they said, my dear Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually they didn't go to meet him directly. They didn't have the guts to meet him directly. When Mahaprabhu came to Ramkeli, in the night, you know, they dressed up themselves, disguised themselves in some other Veshabhush, because the king should not come to know that they went to meet Mahaprabhu. Because they are ministers, having long beard and topi and everything, like Muslims. So they disguised themselves in different way, and put different type of dress, and then they went in the pitch dark night, and went and met Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. They fell at their feet, and they said, oh, my dear Lord, we have been very much longing to join the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We have wasted our life. Please kindly tell Mahaprabhu to deliver us. We just want to follow your path now. Then they told Mahaprabhu that they have come to meet you. And Mahaprabhu said, call them. Then they both went and fell at his feet, and they cried, they wept bitterly. And they said many things. One thing they said was, my dear Lord, we are feeling ashamed to be standing in front of you and speaking about ourselves. We are still even feeling ashamed. Why you are feeling ashamed? We are so fallen that we are even more fallen than Jagai and Madai also. Because Jagai and Madai, they never served Yamlecha. But we are serving Nawab Hussain Shah of Yamlecha, cow flesh eater. By serving the fallen, we become fallen. By serving the great, we become great. So, we are serving the fallen person, like this, Nawab Hussain Shah. Because of that, we also have become Nitya Jati. We have become low-class people by supporting and working for such cow-class eaters like him. And Jagamada, on the other hand, they were Brahmanas, born of Brahmana families. They never committed Vaishnava Parag in their lives. Although they might have done some simple activities. And in front of you, all the sinful reactions are rendered null and void by your association. And they also attend Krishna Prema by you. So they are great souls. They call Jagai Madai as great souls in front of them. Sometimes when we hear Jagai Madai, we have a good laugh. These are like rowdies or some rascals. They consider themselves more fallen than Jagai Madai also. And then they said, my dear Lord, we are aspiring for your mercy, but we feel it is like a buffoon, you know, buffoon or a clown aspiring to catch the moon. Dwarf. Dwarf is trying to catch the moon. Dwarf can never catch the moon. You can't even touch the ceiling. How can you catch the moon? So our aspiration is like that. And then they said, we know that you are called as Patita Pavan Avatar. You see, the prayer they offered was Namo Mahavadanyaya. You are the most magnanimous. And Mahaprabhu said, what are you saying? I am a beggar, I am a sannyasi. What can I give? He said, yes, you are magnanimous, not because you give people money or gold or silver. Krishna prema pradayate. You award people Krishna prema. So, Mahaprabhu may ask, how do you know I award Krishna prema? Because Krishna prema is not an easy commodity to award to anyone. And they said, Krishnaya. You are called as, you are Krishna himself who has come to award the Krishna prema. You know, it's very rarely to be distributed. Only Krishna himself comes to distribute, and that's you, they say. And now you have come as, he may immediately say, Krishna, I mean, how do you call me Krishna? Krishna is bluish black, and my color is golden. How do you call me as Krishna? They say, Krishna Chaitanya. Krishnaya, Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha. You are actually Krishna Chaitanya, so you come with a Gauratvisha, means a golden skin. And then they said, we know that you are out in this world searching for fallen souls. And we can tell you, you don't have to run here and there searching for fallen souls. So best fitting candidates for you are right here. We are in front of you. If you deliver us, you will become very glorious. That's our Mahapatita Pavan. Mosamapatita Prabhu Napaive Hara Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Karo More Tomavina Kedayalu Sanmita Samsare Patita Pavana Heta Tavayavata Mosama Patita Prabhu Apaide. So, they offered a similar prayer. Mosama Patita Prabhu Apaide. There's no one fallen like us. Actually, if you read the background, even Nawab Uddin Shah was a very angry king. He, you know, once he had, just like the pillars we have, he also had many pillars, where he used to make very beautiful portraits and, you know, sculptures and everything. So sometimes he would call some very learned sculptors and all. Sculptors are other people in the country to come and see, how do you like my artistry? And if they see and say that, you know, that's no good, if they say, immediately he'll take his sword and behead them, in the public only, in front of everyone. He was such a cruel, heartless king, dangerous fellow. So he came to know that these Rupa Sanatana are Brahmana boys, coming from Saraswati Brahman families. And they are such influential boys that they are respectable by all the Hindu community in India at that time. They were so respectable. So somebody, some ministers told them, you get them, if you get them, you got all the Hindus. So he got them and said, you have to work for me. If you don't work for me, I will give trouble to all Hindu community. He said, and if you work for me, then I will not trouble them. They have to just pay me tax and I will leave them to practice their Hindu culture peacefully. And that is why they worked for our Nawab Uddin Shah. But then king kept them almost like his own brother. He gave them Dadirka, Sakramani, title and all. He gave them, which is considered in those days, for a Muslim to give the title of Muslim to a Hindu, it's a very rare thing. Unless Hindus are very respectable, they will not give in that sabha. Because they are taking, because the Muslims always accept only Muslims. If they accept a Brahmana Hindu boy into the court and give him a topi and beard and make him a Muslim, it's very rare to give such a position. He gave them palaces. Behind the palaces they had made a Gupta Vrindavan with Govardhan and Radha Kund, Shama Kund, and Kadamba Khan and gardens and everything. Rupa Sanatana had made. They used to go in the mornings and evenings there and chant Hare Krishna. They used to read Bhagavatam. So they used to always absorb in the Vrindavan mode, Vraj mode, staying in those gardens. And they were such great Krishna devotees. And they wrote a letter to Mahaprabhu, saying that, you know, we are trapped in this material world. Please kindly liberate us from this entanglement. Many letters they sent. Mahaprabhu didn't reply. At last once Mahaprabhu replied. Sister said that example of the paramour he had given. If a lady has a paramour, she serves husband so nicely that the husband doesn't detect her love for the paramour. Similarly, Krishna is our paramour, or for all of us in this world. Actually, our body, mind, words belong to Krishna. But we are doing some software business, computer business, or we are doing some mechanical engineering, or civil engineering, electronic engineering. That is our immediate husband in this world. So we work in a company so meticulously well that they will not damage our relationship with our eternal paramour, Krishna. So he taught them like that. Manage business externally, meditate on Krishna internally. Give them instruction. They were such a... So, although Rupa Sanatan were living in almost externally like Muslims, their heart was in Vrindavan. See, they were Krishna Bhakta, they were speaking on Bhagavatam, everything was... But still, when they met Mahaprabhu, they claimed themselves to be fallen. So, we should study the lives of such great souls very carefully to learn how not to justify, how not to imagine oneself to be great. So, in the topic of humility, there are two other very important topics in humility, which comes as a disease. One of the diseases of diseased mentalities. One is trying to prove one's point. Proving one's point. Proving that I am right. So this regarding to that, you gave the example in the morning of Jiva Goswami, correct? Morning you were talking about that. So there is a strong inclination in our heart that I am right, and I will prove to the world how I am right. I can never be wrong. I can never commit a mistake. I am beyond mistake. Either I will prove to the world I have no mistakes, or I will die. Nothing in between. This kind of mentality is also diseased mentality. This is due to lack of humility. So, Krishna will arrange situations in our life where we will also commit mistakes. And when those mistakes are pointed out, it will be very difficult for us to digest, accept. See, Krishna comes as super soul, and he will practically bring us to our hands and knees before we can quit this world and go back to the spiritual world. Ultimately, unless we come to realize our original position, we cannot go back to the spiritual world. In this world, material world, we have four defects, because of which we are also liable to commit mistakes. Nobody can say I am spotless. Even the best of the perfectionist people who think I am the most knowledgeable and I am the best informed, even they will commit mistakes. You will see. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, you know, when you lit a fire, there is also smoke. Similarly, every work we do in this world, no matter how perfect it may be, it will have some inherent defect in it, because it's material world. No work can be defect-free in this world. Even when they make automobile parts, they say, you know, 10 ppm or 50 ppm, they say, 10 parts per million or something. Some defect has to be there, surely. So, in our day-to-day dealings with devotees, this is one very solid ground where we cannot quarrel with devotees. Because we want to do something very perfectly, and another devotee wants to do it a little less perfectly. And we will have a terrible quarrel with the devotee. To prove to the devotee how our opinion is better than that devotee's opinion. And because of that, so the difference in perfection may be a small percentage. It may be maybe 10-20%. And because of that difference in percentage of in the ideas of these two devotees, the quarrel may lead to a point where the relationships may break. So then what a devotee is supposed to do? We should be willing to give our opinion, but be detached. Give up in a Bhagavad Gita. And don't very firmly hold on to one particular opinion, because we should be very flexible. You have to learn flexibility. Of course, we cannot be flexible in committing sinful activities. You can't say, I am a very flexible person, sometimes I do the right thing, sometimes I commit sins also, I am very flexible. No. Committing sinful activities, we can't be flexible. There we have to be very rigid, very strict. But in the realm of righteousness, or in the realm of doing the right things, we don't have to, in order to prove ourselves, we don't have to ruin our relationship with devotees. Proving. Who can give an example for this? Somebody to prove one's righteousness brought about a big quarrel. For a small mistake, one exhibited disproportionate anger or wrath. In Shastra, one example I'll tell you, Daksha Prajapati. All the people stood up. Who didn't stand up? Shiva. Of course, Shiva was in trance. He was in meditation. He was absorbed in remembering the Supreme Lord. And Daksha came and he was looking. Is there everyone standing up? Who is not standing? One fellow was not standing. Right. Shiva. He got wild. And in the public, what blasphemy he gave him. He said, my daughter is doe-eyed and you are owl-eyed, he said. He said, my daughter comes from such a royal family and you are such a low-class man, you have snakes around your neck, you have ashes all over your body, you always live in the crematorium and you are called Shiva, which means auspiciousness in name only, he said. Only your name is Shiva, but you are very inauspicious because of all these dirty things. And I would have never given my daughter in marriage to you. It is only because this Parameshti told me that I should give my daughter in marriage to you, so I give. Like that he showed Brahma also. That way he offended Brahma also. This fellow told me, Parameshti means this great soul told me, I will give my daughter in marriage to you, so I give. So he offended Shiva also, he offended Brahma also. Terribly. Horrible. And subsequently things went. So he wanted to prove that I am right and Shiva is wrong. And in fact, before beginning he told, all of you in the assembly know very well that I am not going to say something now out of my envy. Like that he put this thing also, prelude to that. Actually speaking out of envy only. So, and subsequently things went from bad to worse. And I ultimately got a goat head. That is the end result of this whole pastime. You will see, for his offenses, terrible offenses. Yeah. You see, try to understand the mood of a devotee. Take these two examples. Prahlad Maharaj, what was his offense to Hiranyakashipu? Did he do any offense? Only thing is, he refused to accept Hiranyakashipu as Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's all he did. While the whole world is saying, Hiranyakashipu ji ki jai. Jayakar they were doing, Prahlad Maharaj refused to accept. And for that, Hiranyakashipu became so wild. What all he did not do? He did everything. He did all kinds of torture. At last, after trying all these things, nothing worked. Prahlad called his wife Kayadu and told her, give this glass of poison, black poison, to Prahlad, liquid. Let him drink it. And I couldn't kill him by all other means. Let him drink this poison and die. His wife was trembling. He told her, in front of my eyes, you have to feed him this poison. Make sure he drinks. He cannot run away anywhere. You have to feed him. I said, Prahlad never would run. He saw the glass. When he saw the glass, inside he saw Lord Vishnu was lying in the Ananta Shesh. He saw the beautiful picture. He said, oh, my dear father, you are feeding me Amrit. He said, Prabhupada speaks about this in one of his lectures. And he drank the whole glass. And it didn't, cause any poison at all in his body. You see? He tortured Prahlad like anything. Tried to kill him. At last he decided to cut off the head of Prahlad himself. That time when Lord Narasimhadeva appeared, even at that time, Prahlad knew, this is my father and he is trying to kill me. A child knows. You see, a five-year-old child should not be even rebuked angrily. One should not even do such a thing with any child. But this fellow, he twisted his eyebrows and his, swelling his nose, showing all his sharp teeth. He was constantly cursing and chastising the child. At last he decided to kill the child, and that is observed by the child also. You know, even after all these things, Prahlad is watching Lord Narasimhadev appeared and put him on his lap and killed, tore open his stomach and everything. And then Lord Narasimhadev asked him, what boon you want? He said, please kindly deliver my father. So Prahlad is praying for the welfare of his, eternal welfare of his enemy. That is the devotee. That is very amazing. For no offense, Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlad. But for the big offense performed by Durvasa Muni, Ambarish took no offense. You will see. What was the big offense Durvasa Muni did to Ambarish? He created that huge demon, fiery demon, to kill Ambarish Maharaj. But Ambarish took no offense at all. He didn't even run away. He just was just praying to Supreme Lord, and Lord actually arranged Sudarshan to come. And Ambarish prayed to Sudarshan, oh my dear Lord, my dear Sudarshan, if at all I have performed any pious credits in the past, take away the credits of all those pious credits. Please do not kill Durvasa, this Brahmana. So Sudarshan is also a person. Sudarshan heard his prayers, and because of respect for Ambarish, he did not burn away Durvasa Muni. He left him. For such a big offense Durvasa did, Ambarish did not take any offense. Very amazing. So, in the lives of very, very great souls, you can see. See, these two persons, they said, Ambarish did one small mistake. It's not called actually a mistake. He had a guest, Durvasa Muni, who came to his house. So he drank little charanamrita. But for that, Durvasa became extremely wild. Similarly, you all know this pastime. Saubani Muni was living under the water. That time when Garuda came, he chastised Garuda and said, you cannot come to this Yamuna here because all the fishes are afraid of you. You cannot eat the fishes. If you come here, I will curse you to die, he told. Prabhupada writes that no one can curse Garuda. He is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. But he cursed. But Garuda said, okay, I will not come here. But he took one fish, leader of the fishes, and he flew off. And he became very wild by that also. So, this is a small mistake on the part of Garuda, despite being told he is taking and going. But then, he showed a disproportionate anger. So, when we are perfectionists in our life, all of you think about yourself, how many of you are perfectionists? You don't have to raise your hand. You can raise your hand internally. If you are a perfectionist, there is a likelihood that those people who are not perfect like you are likely to have a terrible fight with them. That's the likelihood. You may say, Prabhupada said you should put 12 mustard seeds, not 11, not 13. You may argue like that. How can you put one extra? Prabhupada will be totally displeased with you. You will go to hell. This is the meaning of perfectionist. Like once Prabhupada came to a Gurukul, One Gurukul teacher was that man, ashram in charge, he asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, how many chapatis we can give these children? Prabhupada saw the children and said, maybe a couple of chapatis we can give them. They were probably about 7-8 years old or so, big chapatis. And now the children grew up to 12 years, And then they want to increase the chapatis, they want to give 4 years. Prabhupada said, only 2. But now they are grown up, they are 12, 14 years old, they need more. So some people, I don't understand the spirit of the law. They catch on to the letter of the law. Hare Krishna Prabhu, welcome. So welcome Prahlad Rati Prabhu. Hari Bol. So Rajadeva Prabhu has brought Prahlad Rati Prabhu. So give him a place. So, we have to know the difference between letter of the law and spirit of the law. So those who are perfectionists will catch on to what? Letter of the law. They will not know the spirit behind the law. You know the story you heard? Any of you can tell the story? Like one rich Marwadi man had made a big Radha Krishna. Actually, I didn't make a temple, it was a house only. It was a house, marble house, but he brought Radha Krishna deity and kept in one main hall. So that became almost like a temple. Many people wanted to come and take darshan in that locality, so they would come. But outside the gate, he had put a board, you know, leave your shoes here. And he kept a watchman there. Because he didn't want people to walk with shoes inside. He wanted them to put the shoes there and wash the feet and come inside, take darshan and all. So, the watchman was a fool. Yeah, because one old couple had come. They kept their car at the end of the street. You know, they had left their shoes inside the car because it was a muddy day. The rains had come that day. So they left their shoes inside the car and they walked all through the mile and that entire lane they covered and they came up to the gate. Watchman stopped them. They asked, can't we wash our feet and go inside and take darshan? He said, where are your shoes? They said, we have left the shoes in the car. They said, look at the board here, leave your shoes here. You have to go there, bring your shoes and put here, only then you can go inside. Understand? What is it called as? Letter of the law, not spirit of the law. So, that watchman was such a fool, he didn't know actually that why that rule is made. Because he didn't know the spirit behind the rule. So, sometimes we may have to adjust the rules according to Deshkala Patra. Those who are perfectionists may be extremely rigid and brittle and inflexible. Because of which there is likely to be a misunderstanding or a quarrel between two people. Anybody has an example for this? You don't have to take names, but without names you can tell an example where two devotees had a difference in opinion, where there was a hot war and hot cold war later. Yeah, Tushar has an example. Ankush and Tushar, they both are examples.
For divine capacity, if you want to how can we check it? Should we want to consider Brahmacharya, they should check it. And one divine is like, no, it's only objective question. Anybody can check that.
They were only objective questions, sir. Okay. Right. See, if it is like, you know, choose the right answer, A or B. Anybody can, even a child can correct, LKG child can correct it. No, you cannot even touch it. You are not qualified to touch the paper. Only senior themselves. That is a practical example of, you know, letter of the law. Yes, Ankush Cook. Correct. Narada preached to the sons of Daksha later. We see that. That Daksha is actually, again, reappeared. Yeah. So, Daksha had sent Harihashva Shavlasvas to Narayan Saras and Narada preached to them and they all became first-class devotees. They became Brahmacharis. So, Daksha had a terrible offensive attitude towards Narada and he was very angry. So, he picked up a quarrel. Narada Muni actually knew that he was very angry. So, Narada Muni thought, if I go and meet him personally, he can vent out all his anger. And after venting out anger, he will become sober. So once that aggressive anger is gone, Narada Muni had, how bold he must be, you can imagine. He went and stood in front of him, and then Daksha Prajapati started blasting out. He said, you are a asadhu, I am the real sadhu. He made the, many nice, brilliant arguments are there in Bhagavatam. So, yeah. So, in those arguments, if you see, they are all on a material platform, not on a spiritual platform. All these arguments. They were actually arguments on the basis of sub-religious principles. It's a very, like, you know, there are different types of dharma. If you ask any mother, she will say that my son should be at home, even though he may be a soldier who may be trained in the battalion for 10 years. Now, India-Pakistan war is coming. Which mother will happily tell the son, my dear son, 10 years training you have taken in army, now you go and fight the battle with Pakistan. How many mothers would say? Every mother is attached to her child. She doesn't want her son to die. So from that point, from mother's love point of view, it may be appearing perfect. But from the objective point of view, you can see that same way we find Daksha Prajapati's arguments are very superficial there. But he is getting into a heated argument. Narada doesn't argue one word also. He silently listens everything. At the end, Narada spoke two words. Tad badam, he said. I accept whatever you said. Thank you. That's all. And Dakshadatta became very sober and became repentant that I have scolded such a sadhu-like person so badly. He repented. And Narada Muni wanted him to get that repentance. So that he wanted to give Krishna consciousness to Daksha also, not only his sons. So, among devotees also this kind of argument that is aroused for proving that I am perfect. Okay, can anybody give an example where either you or somebody else began an argument to prove the other person I am perfect, but in the course of arguing they realize that they are not as perfect as they thought of themselves to be. And then they realize that, oh, now this fellow has captured my mistake. And then they still continue with justification. Because they have begun the argument, they should not leave it in between. So they continued it up to the end point. In Tamil we say, as a proverb it says, a man who had a very big moustache, you know this Malyuddha Karnevala, you know? They have a very big moustache. Like this, they have a big sphere at the end. You have seen that? So once two fellows had a fight and this one had a fight. So the other fellow, he punched him and he put him on the ground. This fellow was flat on the ground and he again got up. The other fellow said, I asked him, do you accept the defeat? And this fellow said, no, who said I am defeated? I am not defeated. Really? The other fellow again caught him, punched him, caught hold of his neck and dipped his face into the sand. You know, there was dry, soft sand there. Dipped his face and his whole moustache became, you know, covered with a lot of sand. Now you ask him, do you accept now? Still he didn't accept. So there is a saying which says, even after the moustache catches the sand, still people will say, I am not defeated. Understand? So these are the people who justify. A person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You know the story, no? Two scientists are arguing. Whether a particular thing can be cut by a scissor or by a knife. One fellow said, knife. Another fellow said, scissor. They were fighting. They were sitting by the side of a river. So this fellow became so angry, the knife wala person. He took the scissor wala scientist and threw him into the water. That fellow, even after going into water, he practically drowned in the water, but his hands were out and showing like this. Scissor. Still you are showing. You know. How many of you have the experience of doing the maximum time period of argument? See, I have done an argument probably, I remember once with one of the devotees, my argument went for about 2.5 hours. What was it about? See, Bali Maharaj was cheated by Vamana Dev, that pastime is there, no? So I was telling that other devotee how it was, the pastime is actually absolute. So that fellow said, Prabhupada is using the word cheated, that should not be used, he said. I said, externally speaking, he cheated. From a spiritual perspective, Lord himself became his servant and became a doorkeeper. You know, in the abode of Sutala Loka. And then the Lord gave him benediction that in the future lifetime, you will become an Indra also. So Lord made him a pure devotee. So Prabhupada using the word cheating is not a problem. So, sometimes we are talking the same point, but slightly from two different angles and our argument goes on for hours sometimes. Anybody has experienced more than 2 hours? Nobody here. Nobody. You are a great source, I think. You don't argue. So, justification or mystification. That is lack of humility. So, that kind. And what will happen is, Targika Sagala Sanghe Bhev Bhev Kari, he says, or Sarva Bhattacharya says, the more we argue, you know, we go into the mode of Vikalpa. He says, Vikalpa means verbal delusion. Verbal delusion means, people will start over a period of time blabbering something which doesn't carry much meaning. When people argue out of false pride. So, a devotee who is humble, the Lord also reveals the truth in his heart. And when one is not humble, one is taken over by egotistic mentality or a false pride, then he may make false logic and false arguments which don't have any basis at all. Both in tamaguna and rajaguna we can make false arguments. Like, you know, when you are confused, bewildered about duty, like Arjuna was in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He came up with some substandard philosophy to defeat Krishna, correct? Arjuna came. Because in America, there are so many confused, bewildered logicians. Every confused fellow who is depressed, who is having psychological problems, they come up with new, new theory about everything. And that is published in the books as very big psychological theories. Similarly, one who is in passion also will argue on a baseless material platform. They will argue. Especially, you can ask lawyers, they say, when a person is not in a proper stable frame of mind, you should not write bill. You know that? You should write bill when he is having a stable mind. Why? If one is driven by passion or ignorance, one should not take any serious action. It is said. In the same manner, a devotee who is driven by passion or ignorance should be very cautious not to get into some futile arguments or trying to prove one's point. That is also a sign of lack of humility. As I told you yesterday night, this point is very important. If I am going to argue with one of my best friends, see, oftentimes you will find, and the argument oftentimes comes with those with whom we are very close. Maybe 7 or 8 people in your life are very close to you. And there is a likelihood, because you talk more, you associate more, you stay together also, there is a likelihood that the arguments we get into sometimes may be with those who are like that. That's a possibility. It's not necessarily philosophical argument. It may be seva related also. Somebody says that this seva should be done like this. Another devotee says, no, there is another way of doing seva. Somebody says, put a book table and announce Bhagavad Gita, announce it. That is the best way and absolute way. Another devotee says, Swamiji, instead of shouting and yelling, my throat is paining, better we carry book bags, meet people personally one-to-one and here. So there is a likelihood there can be differences in opinion when we want to do service. So one thing we should remember, as I told yesterday, that whenever differences in opinion comes in relation to service or in relation to philosophy or in relation to somebody said this, somebody didn't say that and all that, we should always keep that the relationship between two devotees, that is most important for long-term welfare of both the devotees. Remember the 4 points of Bhikkhu Swami I told in the morning? One of the points is, the people with whom I am living now may be the same people who will be surrounding my body at the time of my death. So, if I am going to live with them all through the life, for example, if I have a sweet relation with one of you, if I am living in the ashram, lifelong I can be happy with you. Correct? If I quarrel with one of you today, you quarrel with me, I quarrel with you, we both had a heated argument, then tomorrow, as soon as you look at the person, what happens? When you look at his face, he looks at your face. What happens? There is an uneasiness. Then you try to take different turn, he takes different turn. How long can you keep doing that? That's called cold war, we call it. So, that's why in this Prachina Parishad verse, Lord is telling his 10 sons of Prachina Parishad, Prachetas, that I am most pleased with you because you are all performing devotional service together, unitedly, he is saying. Suppose in the material world there cannot be unity. Like we find, this big family, Ambani family, the brothers had a fight. That's a big family, they are stinking rich, one of the richest people in India. Because when there is a clash between brothers, then selfishly people want to cut the family into multiple pieces and take. Everyone wants to go on. Like one of our boys, in his joint family, there were 40 members, he said. And they have lived for almost 6-8 generations together very peacefully. But now, the top man in the family, everyone, big turban wala, one fellow. People used to have faith in him. But now, what has happened now, as soon as the sons got married, they have their wives, The wives are, filling up the ears of the husband. You say, no, kaan bhar dena bolte hain Hindi mein. They say that, who knows, he may, your bigger brother may take a bigger share and go away. Better you take your share and we will go separately and live. Everyone is saying that. So the whole family is cut into many pieces, because there is a lack of faith nowadays. Actually, it is very rare to find a few brothers who are married, having children, staying together nowadays. One banner, because unity is very rare actually. And in those days unity was there. Why? Because Krishna was the center. And you see, when Krishna is the center, there is trust also. Because everyone used to think that Big Tarmanwala, he is almost like God only for them. He will give me food to eat. He will give me place to stay. Even if I don't know any skill, I don't have any kala with me, still he will maintain me. Bigger brother will help the younger brother, engage him in some business or something. They will do like that. And trust was there in people. But nowadays there is no trust. Between husband and wife, there is lack of trust. Between doctor and the patient, there is no trust. Patient is upset. This doctor will give me anesthesia and steal my kidney. You see here, Or he will make some small problem into a big problem. And he will say, now you have to do heart transplantation and he will extract money from me. Our patients are fearful. Husband, wife, they don't have trust. Similarly, the people are going to hotel for eating. So there is no trust. In friendship, there is no trust. Father and son, there is quarrel. So when Kali Yuga began, Yusuf Maharaj saw these symptoms. Father and son quarreling, husband and wife quarreling, teacher and student quarreling, and students amongst themselves quarreling. Quarrel is a symptom of Kali Yuga. So Kali Raj, he is trying to enter into all the places and create quarrel and hypocrisy. He finds that devotees are all dancing and chanting, they have no problem. And what he does, his Brahmastra weapon to enter into the company of devotees is to create quarrel. As soon as there is two verbal battle between two devotees, Kali has entered that immediately. So what both the devotees should do, they should say, Prabhu, let us stop here. Kali is entering, we will drive him out. We both will jointly drive him out. This is the age of Kali Yuga, we have to be watchful. Immediately they should push the blame on Kali and drive him out immediately. So otherwise, then Kali will use that small crack in the hole, he'll enter inside. This is the age of Kali Yuga, quarrel and hypocrisy. Because we follow four regulative principles. Kali cannot enter. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So there is, Kali has no possibility. And whatever gold, silver, money we get, use it for building temple. We don't store anything with us. So where is Kali having chance to enter? The only way he can enter is through quarrel. That is why here Lord is appreciating prachetas. Because you all are united in devotional service. See, jnani yogis can never be united. Have you ever seen some yogi is sitting in a circle and doing meditation together? Every yogi will have his own tree. He will go to different forest. He thinks his commandero and everything like Vishwamitra was doing. Have any of you seen a dozen lions going in a row like ants? Have you seen lions going like that? Every lion has his own forest. So jnani yogis are like that. It's only bhaktas who can perform devotion service in a united way. And united way means come together and glorify Krishna, because they have no difference in opinion. Krishna is the center. Everyone is trying to please Krishna. So in conclusion, I am going to ask all of you a question with which we will conclude the class today. What are the different reasons for which you will endeavor to cooperate with other devotees? Even in a troublesome situation or inconveniencing situation, you will agree to cooperate with other devotees. What are the different values, or what is the basis on which you will cooperate with another devotee? Any of you raise your hand? Let us take two answers. You could think of 4 or 5 answers, We'll take one by one,
He may do mistakes temporarily, but in future he may learn the things and he may do.
So he is saying that somebody, even if another devotee is doing some mistake, we don't have to fire them or get wild on them. He says that he will forgive them. Why? Because Everyone in this world is fallible, they may do some small mistake, but eventually he may become a big devotee and do great things in future, isn't it? So he will overlook the faults of the devotee and try to continue to appreciate the devotee and move on, correct? Okay, then?
Because I will cooperate because it will be pleasing to my superiors, whom I love very much.
So it will be pleasing to my seniors and superiors, ultimate spiritual master and Prabhupada and Krishna. We want to please them. If you quarrel, that will not please them. So we want to make sure that we don't create discomfort in their hearts. So you have to please them, we cooperate. What else? Everyone is empowered by Guru and Krishna differently, and every devotee is unique. He may not be good in the same service as you, but he may be better than you in another service. Knowing these facts, if we all cooperate, just like in a music, symphony, we call it, no? In an orchestra, all people play different instruments. Somebody plays organ, somebody plays flute, somebody plays violin. Everyone is different expert. But when they all play exactly according to the direction of the director, then the beautiful music comes out. If we don't cooperate, then the whole music is spoiled. Or if one wants to overdo, imagine the drum wala says, I will not play when you say, I will keep playing all through. Dum kudum dum dum, he keeps playing. And the music will be spoiled. So we have to cooperate for the ultimate outcome of some wonderful result for the pleasure of Krishna. For that sake, we will cooperate. What else? Yes? So when someone else commits mistake, we should know, I am also not a person free from mistakes. To err is human, to forgive is divine. Okay, today he committed a small mistake. Okay, you and me, put together, let us see how we can sort out this mistake. That should be our attitude. Not that you committed mistake, you are a fool, you are good for nothing, and I never commit mistakes. You can never say that. Because ultimately the mistake brings about a loss for you and me both. Because the mistake brings loss, which is ultimately loss for the organization. Say somebody has lost some money, for example. It's a loss for the organization. It's not only loss for him. So we should know that we are always in the same boat as the devotees. Like, you know, if you are waging a war, we are waging a war against Maya, not waging a war against another devotee. You cannot shoot the person on the same side. You can only shoot someone on the opposite side. You know? Imagine you are performing war, you are in Pandava side, you shoot another Pandava only. So we have to know that devotees are on the same side and we should tolerate their mistake and try to fight against Maya. Good point. Next. Yes, Ankush Pum. Everybody is a patient. Brilliant point, He is saying, by pointing out the fault of another patient and laughing at them, that is not going to cure your disease. Every one of us, we have our own disease, and we have to accept the medicine that Guru has given us and get cured, and be sympathetic to others who are having other diseases and problems, rather than ridicule them. We may ridicule them today, tomorrow we may have a bigger problem than them. So we should see that devotee having a problem being operated by Guru and Krishna. So every one of us being operated. Sympathy for each other is a good attitude. There's one more? Hate the sin, not the sinner. Yeah, correct. If somebody has some problem or defect or anything, you can hate the wrong behavior or the deficiency, but not the devotee. We can continue to love the devotee. Like some devotees have stayed in ashram for some time and they have left now and they have gone back to get settled in business and everything. When they return back, just like we saw Jananatha who came. When we see the devotee, we can continue to respect them. Because right now they want to be connected to devotees, they want to be Vaishnavas, but along with that they want to also do their family duties and everything. So our respect for them need not diminish. And that's a good point. Hate not the sin. It is called as hate the sin and love the sinner, it is said. Next, who else? He is saying if we have a irritable situation while dealing with another devotee, we don't have to blame that devotee, he is saying. We can blame our own past karma. Because that devotee is only an instrument of our karma. So why to blame the devotee? It's an instrument. Because our own past karma, just like postman coming and giving us our goods. He may give you, you know, 20,000 rupees today and tomorrow he may give you an electricity bill of 40,000. You know? He is just coming and delivering the goods. You cannot embrace the postman or slap the postman. So why to become angry with another devotee? They are delivering our goods. That's a good understanding. What else? Yeah? How I can improve my behavior in such a way that he will cooperate with me? This is a point B.T. Swami also says, you know, you oneself to be the first source of all conflicts. He says, good point. Who else had a point? Yeah? Devotees are the only people who can remind us of Krishna. If they quarrel even with them, then how will I remember Krishna? If I quarrel with devotees, and devotees are also very less in this world, not many are there, only a small fraction. While living with them, we have to cooperate with them in order for us. In fact, our friendliness with them is for our own benefit in the first place. Mere hit ke liye. I should be good friends with devotees. Yes. Yeah. Moon may have moon gives light and it also has some pock marks, black marks or something. Similarly, a devotee is giving the light of Krishna consciousness to everyone, but they may have some deficiencies which should be overlooked. Small deficiencies in people should be overlooked. Then we should see the brighter side of people. You know, in America, there is a very famous businessman. His name is Andrew Carnegie. At one time, this fellow had 53 millionaires working under him. One staff reporter came to him and asked, "Sir, every millionaire wants to be independent. How is it that you have 53 millionaires working under you?" And he was having some iron ore, steel industry business and all that. So that fellow said, how he could maintain those 53 millionaires under him as subordinates. He said, when you go searching for gold, when you dig gold, first you dig lot of dirt before getting gold. For getting a few ounces of gold, you have to dig tons of dirt, he said. But I dig tons of dirt, but I don't even pay attention to that. And what am I looking for? Some ounces of gold. That's what I do with people, he said. When I deal with people, he said, I look for one spark in them which can be fanned and developed into a fragrant fire. Rather than pinpointing, they have this fault, that fault, because that will never serve the purpose, he said. That is a good point. Similarly, devotees also, see, the only person who has the authority, who has the right to pinpoint faults is the guru or guru's representative, or the authorities, who are genuine well-wishers of the subordinates. Their only goal in pointing out faults is to help that person get uplifted. Otherwise, you know, equals and other friends and all, they have no right to keep floating, you know, the bad qualities of one devotee to everyone else. You cannot do. Just like if you catch a pickpocketer in the street, what will you do? Say in the Pune station you caught a pickpocketer who is stealing, what will you do? You will bring him to temple and beat him up? What you will do? Hand him all to police. Yeah, because police is the authority. Similarly, if you find somebody having some problem, what we should do? Hand him over to authority. That's all. And then they will do the needful. We don't have to go and tell everyone, see, I have found out this fellow has this problem, all of you please know it. We don't have to do that. So, that's a good example of moon having black mark. Very good example. Who else had a point? Yeah? ಪಿಚೇ ಸುಧರಾಚಾರೋ ಭಜತೆ ಮಾಮನನ್ಯ ಭಾತ್ ಸಾಗರೇವ ಸಮಂತವ್ಯ ಸಂಯೋಗ ಪ್ರವೇಶಿಸ. Even if a devotee, due to some reason, slips and falls away from the proper position of a stand of a devotee for some period of time, but the devotee, just like Ajamila, fell down. But then Ajamila became repentant, and again he became reinstated in devotional service. So one should accept such a person as a sadhu, Krishna says. If Krishna accepts him as a sadhu, who are we not to accept? Krishna says that they should be seen as a saintly person because he is repenting. In the fire of repentance, crying hot tears of repentance, all his sinful reactions are burnt to ashes. If there is some deficiency, so we can overlook the deficiency in that way. And also one point surprising, Nanasi said that, which I have been mentioning 2-3 times in the lecture, while dealing with another devotee, if there is a likelihood of a verbal battle breaking out, we will resist ourselves and we will quit that place. Why? Because we want to have a prolonged, continued relationship with the devotee. For the sake of relationship, sometimes we can bend. See, materialistic people means, you know, win-lose for them. I should win and you lose. Sajjan people means win-win. Main kush, tum kush, dono kush. I'll be happy, you'll be happy. Parasukha sukhi. But sometimes a devotee can also be lose-win. Lose means I am ready to lose myself and allow you to win. Why? In order to maintain the relationship. Sometimes the devotee may be ready to bend. Like husband and wife, you know. Like a wife is saying, this year, you know, Maharaj is going to South India, so I want to go to South India. The husband is saying that, you know, no, we will go to Vrindavan Dham for Kartik. I would like to see the, you know, Deepotsav there. I like that very much. Let us go there. If husband and wife are quarrel, where will they go? So one of them have to give up, you know. So the husband should say, okay, this year we'll go to this year we'll go to South India, and maybe next Kartik we'll go to Vrindavan. He should do that. Or wife should say, okay, we will go to Kartik in November, and then for the South India Yatra, you may not be able to spend money. For 2 Yatras you cannot spend. So maybe South India Yatra, and I can go alone with my friends, other Matajis. So you can come, I will come with you to Kartik and go to the Vrindavan, so you will be happy and then you allow me to go for this yatra. That can, some agreement has to be done. You have seen the two goats story, no? They were coming in a bridge and then both the goats met there. And this goat said, hey, hat jao, mujhe jana aage. Both were saying. And then they both had a fight, you know that? They both fell into the river, isn't it? So in another picture you find one goat sat down, another goat went, isn't it? So, in devotees' case also, when two devotees are dealing with each other, there will be situations of difference in opinion, difference in ideas, difference in ways of working, difference in level of perfection, and difference in the background talents that both devotees may have. Because of all these things, differences are there. But still unity is possible because Krishna is the center. Krishna's pleasure is the center. And also, I will cooperate for another reason. Why? Because Shastra says, when you become angry, it is like carrying a red-hot coal in the hand and running after a person. If you become angry on someone, that fellow is running, you also run after him. I want to, you know, prove that I am right. So you burn yourself more than harming that person. Actually, he may even escape and, you know, go into your room and close the door also. You may be kicking the door outside, hey, open the door. You are trying to prove your point. In the course of doing that, holding that red hot coal in the hand, who gets more burnt? We get more burnt. Similarly, while dealing with different people, you know, if situation is becoming very, very materialistic and not very favorable, one should immediately stop it. Because we have to remember this, Trinadapi Shunich and Tararapi Sushna, Amani Nama. Trinadapi Shunich means, one should be more humbler than a straw in the street, he says. Straw in the street is most neglected. It is, you know, it is driven over by the cars. People put their foot on it, some people put urine on it. It's lying in the road. It doesn't demand any respect. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave a definition of humility. Humility means no expectation from anybody, he said. So the devotee should cultivate this quality. If there is a story in the Vedas also that once there was a heavy storm in which there was Ganges coming down the hill, gushing, pure whitish waters, like waterfalls, and then flowing in the ground. It had uprooted a big tree, and the whole tree was toppling down the hill. Uprooted tree and was flowing down. So one sage asked the question to the Ganges, Oh Ganges, how is it that such a huge tree is floating down from the top to bottom like this, practically upside down, and it's floating like this? How is it? While I am seeing that there are long grasses and everything on the top of the hill, and you don't harm them at all. So Ganges said, when I gush and flow fastly, all the grasses, they bend down. They all bend down. But this tree is standing erect, so I have to uproot this tree and bring it down. He said. So those who are erect in their false ego, refusing to be flexible with other devotees and bend themselves at the time of need, they'll be uprooted by Maya and given necessary reformation dose to purify their ego eventually. We have to see, am I speaking from the platform of egoism? You have to see that whenever we argue. Those who are willing to adapt themselves, bend themselves, or even if one has to express a strong opinion, it's a right opinion, it has to be done in a very favorable climate of good relationship. It should not be done in a way that will hurt either of the party, either of the devotees. See, I'm telling you these things, why you are all in your ICFC level now. You will go for pre-Bhakshastri, Bhakshastri, and then go to the senior mode. So in this stage, if you learn these things, you can save yourself from so many further problems in life. Otherwise, you have to learn from the school of hard knocks, as you call it. In which way you want to learn? You want to learn it smooth way, or you want to learn it through a school of hard knocks? School of hard knocks means trial and error. you enter into a dark room, you don't know whether there is floor or there is a hollow pit under the ground. You put your feet and you go down. So instead of entering a dark room, we are first putting on the light. So that when you walk, we can be careful. You know where to put the feet and where not to put. So we are learning those things. So one thing that I didn't talk about humility is the right beyond right, which we will talk probably along with tolerance in the next time when I come, next week when I come. Srila Prabhupada ki, Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Hare Bhakta Vrinda ki. Thank you very much.
That's all right.
Bhagavad Gita.